Good morning, everyone. Today is Sunday, June 17th, 2018, and we welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independence, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we will start this morning with our prayer. Our poem.
This is from the Blue Book, page 61. Father, teach me how to still the clamoring of sense and fill my place as listener, that I may hear thy voice and grow to understand thy word and so become thy messenger. Then teach me how to banish pride and stubborn will, that I may be thy representative, with no false sense of human zeal, that every word may bless and heal when I thy message give.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
And then from Miscellaneous Writings, Mary Baker Eddy, we today in this classroom are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind, for then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind, as when the earth was without form, and mind spake, and form appeared. Our subject this morning is the universe, including man, evolved by atomic force? And the golden text, Psalm 19. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. I never can read that without thinking of the beautiful hymn number 329. The heavens declare the glory of him who made all things. Each day repeats the story. Each night its tribute brings. To earth's remotest border, his mighty power is known. In beauty, grandeur, order, his handiwork is shown. And this beautiful lesson is one that Fairley wrote. Many of you have mentioned what you have been getting from it. So thank you. Thank all our lesson writers for the wonderful job they do week after week. We're very, very grateful. So let's start. I'm going to start today with a couple of things. One is something Linda found from Bignell Young. She said it was 1936.
Right? Yeah, his class notes. He was talking to his students about statements of truths. He had them bring them into the class. And so he's addressing this idea of just pulling out words from the books. When I ask you to give a citation today to bring out clearly the unreality of evil, what I expected was unfoldment, not corroboration. All you have done is to bring in sentences containing the words unreality of evil. What is the matter here? That is just a phrase, and it does not mean a thing unless we understand it. We must get rid of all that orthodox stuff, the stereotyped expressions and routine phrases. That is the way error is trying to destroy the movement. It would undermine the very foundation of all that Mrs. Eddy established. Don't you see that is what is permeating our church periodicals and official literature? I don't mean Mrs. Eddy's works or the writings of Mr. Kimball, but the rest of our literature is becoming more and more permeated with stereotyped and routine expressions so that you can't tell whether you've read an article before or not. And then he went on to say, the articles to be useful do not have to be full of tremendous metaphysical statements, clearly unsuited for unprepared thought. That would be outside their purpose. But the articles we have been getting in the periodicals have been more about Christian Science instead of being Christian Science, end quote.
Thank you. That is so well said and something to be very, very careful of. And again, it is why people send me things often to read. But what we have, what we offer in our church, the creme de la creme. It is the very best of the early workers. And it's not just prattling or talking about science. It's deep metaphysics, and it always handles animal magnetism. I was recently given a book. It was a good book. There were good things in it, but I don't think there was one thing in it that handled the animal magnetism. That thing about malpractice. It was all God is love and he's your supply and all of this. You've got to have that traction. You've got to have that in it, or it's incomplete. And what did you find, Florence, Mrs. Eddy said about writing Science and Health? What was she?
It's in Miscellany. I don't remember. She was saying that she found that her printer stopped working, and she was getting the message to include what she was being told about animal magnetism, and for some reason, I think she was resisting it, she said, and it kept coming, this conviction to add it to the book, and when she did it, shortly after that, the printer had set out to meet her, and she had set out to go and give him what she had. None of them knew this, and they met at a station. I'll find the page. It's in Miscellany, and they exchanged. You know, she gave it to him. I mean, it was just God. The whole thing was God engineered, because it just stopped. She wasn't writing again, and he wasn't going to continue to print. None of them communicated, but that's what was happening until she added that part about animal magnetism.
Chapter on animal magnetism. It has to be.
And then he printed.
Right, and then he continued, printed, finished what he was supposed to do.
Any good watch, you have to handle it, of course. Any good lesson, any good treatment, it must be in there. You can't just say all is wonderful. Not while we're still on this planet, anyway. Any questions about that?
I was thinking what Linda read certainly shows why they cast them out. Was uncovering that they weren't, the DOD or whatever was not doing what they were supposed to be doing, and they didn't want to fix it or didn't know how to fix it. So better to get rid of that voice thing they're not doing.
Well, actually, Big Del Young was, they did not escape. They couldn't because he was so popular.
They wanted to, but they couldn't.
They gave it, really made it difficult for him, though, at the end.
Yeah.
I have a comment.
Go ahead.
Just that when I was first learning about Plainfield, I tried to share some of the watches with a friend of mine who had been in the BOD church for a really long time, but she loved the prayers, in the watches, prayers and arguments, but when I would mention, and somewhere in there usually there's something that says, as you say, handled animal magnetism, and she loved everything that was positive in the prayers, but would not hear anything that was negative. She said, "Why do you even have to mention that?" And I said, "Well, that's the way it was. That's the way Mrs. Eddy recommended, or those was either her words." And it was so typical BOD style praying for her that she didn't want to hear anything that was even a mention of animal magnetism, even the addressing of it. And so it kind of shows just the mentality that is so prevalent in the BOD-style church.
Thank you. Absolutely. It's a characteristic.
It's a correct characteristic of the human mind. It doesn't want to hear anything unpleasant, or it wants all the good without having to handle the evil. It's lazy. It's guilty.
Right? Yeah. It's fighting for its own life. It knows if you handle it, you will awaken to what it's doing.
And that's why Mrs. Eddy says, error is impersonal. Evil is impersonal. This is not a person. resisting the truth. This is a false belief that is resisting the truth. And to the extent that we hang on to any false belief within us, we are going to feel that resistance. That's why when we feel uncomfortable, when we feel a resistance, whenever the truth is spoken, that's a good thing. You should look inside and say, okay, what's trying to hang on to me to get me to do or think or act something wrong? And if you can deal with it that way impersonally, you can grow spiritually. And that's a sign of a good worker. But what is it that gets in the way for anybody that doesn't want?
Pride.
Thank you. That's why pride is deadly. There is nothing good about pride.
You'll find you get a much greater sense of peace and joy every time you do handle the animal magnetism. The claims that there's a power apart from God, and that's all it ever is. And if you just go skim over it, it's a natural tendency just to want to think about the good things. I was a classic case of that, and I was terribly miserable. Also, before coming here and meeting Mrs. Evans, I remember reading all this stuff, and a lot of it was all, oh, well, everything's great, wonderful. And I kept saying, well, how come it's not in my life, and how do I get there, and feeling this deep anxiety. And it wasn't until I came here and learned about all of this that I began to get, I say, traction, start feeling you can move. You're not just spinning your wheels, so to speak.
Now, let me just say what I was talking about is found on page 37 of Retrospection and Introspection. And she calls it the precious volume, which is when she added it, then ready to go.
Thank you. And then this new pamphlet we have by Bignell Young, his article, Electricity, which is very interesting, but he says, how shall we meet the demands this age is making on us? By denying the claims of an evil mind power and discerning the spiritual counterfact, the irresistible Christ power, the one infinite mind force operating as all power and all presence, omnipotent love, constituting all consciousness and determining its own outward harmonious phenomena. If Christian scientists are discerning daily the powerlessness of so-called evil mind power to determine an outward phenomena, the chemicalization will be less severe and it will shorten the days of error. And this is our great necessity. The uncovering and upheaval of so-called evil thought in the world is only evidence of what divine science is doing to bring these claims to the surface. Then, do we need to stand aghast and wonder what is going to happen next? The unfoldment of truth and love, which has brought these evil suggestions to the surface, will melt them away if you and I are faithful to our unfoldment to deny these aggressive suggestions until their powerlessness is recognized in our spiritual discernment of the irresistible Christ power, in the one infinite God power, the power of our scientific denial and spiritual discernment. Now you see, he doesn't just say God is love and everything's lovely. He's talking about dealing with the error. And think again, this sentence, if Christian scientists are discerning daily the powerlessness of so-called evil mind power to determine an outward phenomena. So, when you hear something in the news of evil trying to make a situation happen, you know it's powerless, not of God, powerless. The chemicalization will be less severe, and it will shorten the days of error. And this is our great necessity. We must take this work very soberly and seriously, and do it daily, and do it every time you hear where there's some kind of error in motion. And this is what our watches are always about. And certainly, you know, our Thursday night one, that deal with a nation and the world. And the Tuesdays and Saturdays are dealing with science, the cause of science, giving it free rein to go forth in our church and everywhere. The true science, not the bogus, but the true.
In Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy says that Christian scientists have enlisted, right, to do what?
Lessen evil
and
hold crime in check, too.
Thank you. But enlisted implies what?
An army.
You're joining an army. I know when I first came to Plainfield a couple of years ago, the idea of enlisting in an army was not something that I was interested in. I thought you could go through life being nice, being diplomatic, and that there was a pleasant solution to every problem. And boy, was I wrong. That was the result of the brainwashing I got in the Boston church. And it didn't work, and there were a lot of things in my life that were all screwed up as a result of that. But once I woke up one morning and I said, you know, it's okay to be in an army. It's okay to draw my sword and handle error. It's okay, and I'm going to do that. And I don't care if I hurt anybody's feelings. I don't care what, you know, all I care about is if I do right. And if God approves, that's enough. And once I made that declaration to myself, once I accepted that, all of a sudden a lot of things in my life started to straighten out. And they've continued to straighten out. But if you're not willing to enlist to handle the false beliefs, then, you know, fine, good luck. But don't expect things to work out really well because you're not on God's side when you fail to take up false beliefs.
It's why we feel such a closeness to each other, because it's like being war buddies. We're all together working and have this closeness. And this lesson also handles this belief of Father's Day that there's a material creator when over and over we're reading in Science and Health and also the Bible, there's the one creator, God good. He is our Father, Mother. And in finding Him as our Father, Mother, we find each other as brothers and sisters in Christ. And that is our family, the true family. And it's a family we unite on. And it's interesting. Because in the lesson, it talks about adhesion, cohesion, and attraction. And those words, adhesion is the act of being united by growth, union. Cohesion, the act of sticking together, being united by natural attraction. And then attraction, the power and principle or tendency of bodies to unite. So,
can enemies ever unite?
No.
Can
never.
Can an evil purpose ever unite people?
No.
No. No, criminals can't get along with one another. and the reason why is attraction is only a property of mind with a capital M.
When they try to do so, it's very short-lived. conflict is inevitable. So it breaks apart. That's the nature of evil, is to destroy itself.
Yeah, they usually end up turning on each other.
And that's why we should never be fearful of conspiracies.
Again,
we should handle them. Don't ignore them. Don't condone them. Don't enable them. But don't fear them either.
Yeah, and just as Bigdell Young says, you handle it as powerlessness and know that it can't produce the phenomena it's trying to. And that statement from Science and Health, adhesion, cohesion, and attraction are properties of mind. They belong to the divine principle and support the equal pose of that thought which launched the earth in its orbit and said to the proud wave, thus far and no farther. And, you know, isn't it wonderful? Every morning we wake up and everything is percolating. And I don't see people fighting in the streets. Good is so much more prevalent than evil. And it would only be the media that would get you to think otherwise. We need to be aware of what's going on so we can handle it, but we must never think it's prevalent, because it isn't. We talked about yesterday the qualities of God in that statement from Chronicles. Vastness, you know, majesty, greatness, the power, the glory, the majesty, that is God. It's covering the earth and the universe, his power and his glory. And that said to the proud wave, thus far and no farther. Elizabeth, she's here, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Elizabeth, tell them the experience. That was a statement we used in working.
So last year and the year before, there were a couple hurricanes headed toward one of our homes in South Carolina. And that was a wonderful statement to work with, because this hurricane was actually headed right toward this island. And one of the things that happened is, and one of the newscasters noticed this, they saw the water, the wind was blowing the water down the beach instead of toward the island, and they said they'd never seen that before. And that was a wonderful demonstration of the wave, God holding that wave, and really there was very little damage.
A wonderful demonstration, all that they predicted and all the weather forecast and all they said that was going to happen did not happen. God held that proud wave. And this is what can be expected as you are working with your science, and also when you have, as we talked about, money in the bank of God. If you've been living a wild and woolly life and have barely thought of God at all, and then, oh, help me, well, good luck. But when you are really living it, and you are one of the faithful ones, and you are working day in and day out, then God preserves the faithful. And these things you'll find happening, and then people scratching their heads wondering why they don't happen. Well, now look at God. Look within. Anyone else want to say anything or ask any questions? All right, move on.
I just wanted to say about what Gary was mentioning earlier about, you know, this is being enlisted into an army. When I first arrived here, my practitioner gave me a bunch of things to read, and one of them was the Dixon letter, and that was the smallest, so I read that first. And I don't know if I would really recommend that to a new person, but it really struck me, like, wow, these people are doing something real. There's something real to this. So I'm very glad that I think that's the first thing I read. It made me take this seriously.
And that's why you keep it on the
It's on my bookshelf. It's got its own place. So.
Well, it's a call to arms, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It's good to go back to it every so often, really.
Right.
Read it. I read a part of it every morning.
Wonderful. It keeps your juices flowing. It reminds you why we watch. It explains things quite well. And so.
Yeah, that's the other part of it. Before coming here, I got into the place I couldn't even watch the news without just feeling, you know, stricken that world's a big evil place and I can't do anything. So to go from that to now where something comes up and I realize, okay, now I got to watch. And then through the course of watching, I can find peace again. I'm very grateful for that.
Well, that's why we have to be so careful about the news, because they have to make money. They have to print something that will get people's attention. But as the Golden Text says, the heavens declare the glory of God. The firmament showeth his handiwork. Mary said, good is prevalent because good is the only power. I mean, if good wasn't the only power, you know, we'd all be dead. You know, there wouldn't be life. There wouldn't be truth. There wouldn't be just one God. But there is just one God. And that God is good. So when we see the good going on around us, we're acknowledging God. And we're seeing things as they really are. And that is a safe place to be.
That's what Paul said. We live and move and have our beings in God.
Yeah. So, you know, what a wonderful statement of truth. And now we've got work to do to prove it, don't we?
Wouldn't it be nice when the time comes when good will be the attraction so that the news will all be good news?
Yes.
It'll be great.
Well, and we do. One thing to work on is the news, which is why Mrs. Eddy had the Christian Science Monitor, which...
That's why she started a newspaper.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And be very discerning in what you know to be true and what isn't true. So.
Something I learned a long time ago when I learned to weld was that if you slam a piece of iron hard enough with a hammer, it becomes magnetic. So I just think of that attraction will be there when we slam it hard.
Yes.
So this lesson is translating everything from this belief that we are matter beings and surrounded by matter and material forces to the understanding that it is all spiritual and that there are not two creations. Not trying to destroy and get rid of one horrible creation. There's just the one. And if we keep seeing it and praying and watching, and we will have it. You will have it individually, and then we will have it collectively. Linda, read what you wrote on the forum. Yes, go ahead, read it. I especially want the Matthew Henry quote.
Okay, I wrote about Job 38, where it says, where wast thou when I laid the foundations of the earth? And Matthew Henry wrote of this chapter, the humbling of Job, and that, quote, humble faith and sincere obedience see farthest and best into the will of the Lord, end quote. And then I just went on from there about the darkening the council words without knowledge, which made me real excited when I found the Big No Young, because it was the same thing, as it, you would use words, and what was behind the words was really important, and that you could say a lot of words, but they said there's a lot of writing, debating, speaking, preaching, conversation that explains nothing and leaves the subject more perplexed. And that was part of Job that I was writing on, and I just... It made me realize the importance of what we say and write and what was behind it, because so so much when I was in the VOD said a lot of these things we say here, but it did not have the same effect. And it can be very confusing and darkening. It actually even causes more fear. And that was very confusing to me. But now I'm understanding more. And I see why it's even worse that if you do not know how to handle animal magnetism and you speak about handling animal magnetism, that's got to be one of the worst crimes there could be. Because of the lack of clarity.
That's a good point. Because as everybody has probably found, discovered, or if not, you soon will, once you declare something to be true, once you declare something, the devil's going to say, oh yeah, prove it. And you're going to be put in a position where you're going to have to prove it. So it's like, you know, what makes a good article?
From the heart.
Yeah, when you're writing about something that you've actually proved to yourself, not something that you intellectually think you might understand.
That is so That's important.
The worst.
That's the worst. That is what Linda's talking about. That's what rolls the stone against, stone against your heart.
But when you've proved something, and it's firmly emblazoned on your forehead and firmly embedded in your heart, you can write about it, and it will reach other hearts, and it will be of help to people.
You can also talk about it, and you can give a testimony about it. And it's what makes our testimonies meaningful, because that's what you were doing. Not intellectual. Anyone can get up and quote things, speak intellectually. That's what Linda was reading. It's terrible. It's awful. And it's what McNeil Young says. Will ruin the movement. It's done a pretty good job of that.
It's done a good job so far.
People don't understand it at all, and yet they talk about it like they do. So don't say more than what you have been able to live. And then, citation 7. Carol, would you read it, please? In Science and Health.
Nature voices natural, spiritual law and divine love, but human belief misinterprets nature. Arctic regions, sunny tropics, giant hills, winged winds, mighty billows, verdant vales, festive flowers, and glorious heavens all point to mind, the spiritual intelligence they reflect. The floral apostles are hieroglyphs of deity. Suns and planets teach grand lessons. The stars make night beautiful, and the leaflet turns naturally towards the light.
Thank you. That's why we can look out and see all the beauty. Certainly are seeing it now, the beautiful June roses here in the east, all the loveliness. Lushness of the trees and everything so beautiful, all hieroglyphs of God's presence and power. And on the forum, Parthens write about suns and planets, each grand lesson, and he goes into the idea of sun and what does sun represent?
God.
Soul. And the story of Joshua, what is that story, Bruce?
Well, Joshua was fighting this battle. He needed more time, so he commanded, "Dear God, set the sun still so we can complete your work." And you think everything's in motion and the momentum keeps it going, but there's a higher power, and that's God. God did set the sun still so that Joshua and his army could complete God's work there. So there was a higher power that was ruling.
Thank you.
Never happened since.
No. But Parthen speaks of the idea of the
sun being still and that penetrating light just shining forth, destroy anything unlike itself, and the importance of that stillness. What are some of the things the Bible says? Be still and know that I am God. And I believe it's at Collectanium, Mrs. Eddy says, that we need to study to be quiet. It always impressed me so. It's a very important trait, and in thinking about it, I see how important it is, because isn't it true that your thought is often racing? You know, you're trying to do a watch or something, and it goes from one thing to the next. You've got to really hone it in. Stillness is most important. You can't go racing around like a horse at a horse track.
Well, one of the things that Florence had in her prayer is that teach me to still the clamoring of sense.
That was a beautiful prayer. Where was that found again?
61 of the Blue Book, page 61.
Yes.
And in Mrs. Eddy's treatment for every day, toward the end, she says, Lord, help me to remain silent when it is not necessary to speak. I found that very helpful.
Yes.
That's what somebody used recently.
Pardon me?
I said that's what somebody used recently for a demonstration, just to be quiet when it wasn't necessary to speak.
Colleen.
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes, silence is golden. If you're ever with someone and they just become quiet, it's cause for thought.
Well, that's true in a lot of situations as well. Someone comes to you with an argument. Sometimes silence is the greatest rebuke.
Penetration of light. It was mentioned earlier. Light does penetrate. That's a good thing. It kills anything that's unlike itself.
Yes.
Another thing I like about this silence is it's the antidote to human ambition. You know, what's the motive that's pushing you or driving you? If it is God, then the emotions are at peace with Him. If they're not, better to be still until you feel His impulse.
It could also mean refusal to give error any life. When people start talking about certain erroneous things, silent and then knowing the truth, it's refuting it.
Very, very good. Very true. You just try that. Just don't say a word. If gossip is going on or something, you know, if you feel impelled to rebuke it, you can, but sometimes just be quiet and knowing the truth, they'll feel it. You know, Mrs. Evans was one who, she was talkative, but if you ever said anything and she was quiet, it was like, uh-oh. So those are all really good points as to when to be quiet. Don't engage in error or a silent rebuke, sometimes better than a verbal one.
Peter had to learn that yesterday, the Bible study.
Yeah.
Talking when he shouldn't have.
Right, yes, yep. And there's always this, you know, nervous conversation that sometimes people indulge in that's not necessary. Talking because they're trying to fill up the silence.
Silence can seem very uncomfortable.
But very important, and it is spoken about in other ways to silence. What does Mrs. Eddy say? Silence for a space of an hour or something. You know, a wonderful thing. And what did you say about treading on forces?
Yeah, it says we tread on forces, and somehow I just couldn't get my mind straightened out, because every time I hear the word tread, almost like somebody's stamping something down. But I found in the dictionary that there was a really good definition that was to walk with dignity. And I felt we tread on forces, you know. Well, these forces are God. He's the only force. So as we go about our day, we're actually giving acknowledgement and dignity to the great force itself that has set all things in motion. That's Almighty God. When we give tread on forces, we are acknowledging God and His supremacy, and that He is indeed the force.
Better read that paragraph. Do you have it?
Okay.
Number 5, Spirit is the life.
Spirit is the life, substance, and continuity of all things. We tread on forces. Withdraw them, and creation must collapse. Human knowledge calls them forces of matter, but divine science declares that they belong wholly to divine mind, are inherent in this mind, and so restores them to their rightful home and classification.
Thank you. Time and time again in this lesson, Mrs. Eddy is bringing everything back to God, the Spirit. So-called mineral, vegetable, and animal substances are no more contingent now on time or material structure than they were when the morning stars sang together. Mind made the planet of the field before it was in the earth. The periods of spiritual ascension are the days and seasons of mind's creation, in which beauty, sublimity, purity, and holiness, yea, the divine nature, appear in man and the universe, never to disappear. And as we're working, this is a present possibility. This is what we should be seeing. And then, this is very important for you, the true theory of the universe, including man, that means including you, is not in material history, but in spiritual development. So, what does that mean for you? How often do you think about your material history?
Too often.
I was going to say not as much as I used to.
Well, that's a better answer.
That is spiritual development.
What's important about your history is how it got you where you are, the spiritual things you've been learning all your life, the seeing God's presence and power with you throughout your life, your years. Spiritual development. But if you're constantly thinking about your material history, when they ask you, you go to a doctor's office and they want to know your material history. Not important. And they go back about your ancestors, how everybody was doing 80 years ago. I mean, honestly, you do have to laugh at it and not let it influence you erroneously. If you're God's creation, God created you in His image and likeness. End of story.
So the only way that I can know anything that's true about the universe or true about myself is to see God at work, is to see it spiritually and not be impressed by the material appearances for my eyes.
So remember this, check yourself. Don't go into this material history. Let a little buzzer go off if you should. And stop it. Remember, it's only in your spiritual development. That's all that matters.
More clearly you see God at work, the more clearly we can see God's creation, the more clearly we will see what is real and true. Otherwise, eyes, we're looking at an illusion, human dream, that is not going to lead us to happiness or health, security, or anything good.
That goes along with the lesson as far as Jesus saying, call no man your father on earth.
Yep. Yep.
Over and over, and I love, the tree and herb do not yield fruit because of any propagating power of their own, but because they reflect the mind which includes all. So when you look at the tree and herb and you see all the blossoming and all the wonderful things going on now, not through any power of their own. And Colleen and also Lawrence and Gary spoke about it on the forum. Again, not two creations, but one creation. Don't get boggled down with the material sense of things. Lawrence, did you want to say anything about that? About being God involved?
Yes, I just love the reminder here all the time to know that God is all. And it might seem like, oh, well, I've heard it before, but do I really know it? And the section in the Bible, I mean, in the lesson that talks about creation is ever appearing and must ever continue to appear from the nature of its inexhaustible source. Mortal sense inverts this appearing and calls ideas material. This is the catch, always, you know, catching us to believe a lie, you know, the deception. And I said that Mrs. Eddy gratefully has given us the alertness to duty so that we'll be awake, not to be fooled, whether it comes as a feeling even, because when it comes as a feeling, sometimes it gets us there, you know. So to be always knowing, no, God is all, this is not from God, therefore it's a lie, and push back.
Thank you.
I think I'm going to have Gary conclude now. We have something, it's a little long, but it's very good. Addresses by Martha Wilcox. Starts on page 362.
This is Martha Wilcox, Scientific Translations. When rightly viewed, all natural things, from the sands on the seashore to the stars in the heavens, are formations of spirit and are spiritual. So also is everything from a pin to a palace, including houses and lands and money, when these are correctly understood. Mrs. Eddy says, Science and Health, page 70, the divine mind maintains all identities, from a blade of grass to a star, as distinct and eternal, end quote. Then a star, which to one state of human consciousness is inanimate matter, when rightly viewed, is an identity or is identical with mind, spirit, and must be spiritual. The whole point at issue is our individual viewpoint. For the most of us, the sand on the seashore would seem very inanimate and material. But to Jesus, it would not seem so. Mrs. Eddy says, Miscellaneous Writings, page 74, Christ Jesus' sense of matter was the opposite of that which mortals entertain, end quote. Then what to us is material must have been to Jesus spiritual. There is an old legend taken from the Aquarian Gospel, which tells of Jesus when he was 7 years old. He was telling the people who had gathered before his home of a dream. He said, I had a dream, and in my dream I stood before a sea upon a sandy beach. The waves upon the sea were high. A storm was raging on the deep. Someone above gave me a wand. I took the wand and touched the sand, and every grain of sand became a living thing. The beach was all a mass of beauty and song. I touched the waters at my feet, and they were changed to trees and flowers and singing birds. and everything was praising God. I heard a voice which said, "There is no death. The sea of life rolls high. The storms are great. The multitude of men are idle, listless, waiting, like dead sands upon the beach. Your wand is truth. With this you touch the multitudes, and every man becomes a messenger of holy light and life. You touch the waves upon the sea of her life. Their turmoil ceases. The very winds become a song of praise. There is no death, because the wand of truth can change the driest bones to living things and bring the loveliest flowers from stagnant ponds and turn the most discordant notes to harmony and praise." From Valley Glossary, page 596. To Jesus, things at hand were not inanimate, material things. This legend illustrates the fact that everything at hand, when viewed correctly, is spiritual reality. With our wand of truth, these spiritual facts can be translated into concrete visible forms, which we can understand, and into human experiences, which are needful. Our Heavenly Father knoweth that we have need of these things. Such things as health and sight and beauty and food and clothing and homes and friends and money. It is very important to know that there are not two groups of creation, but that all things are spiritual. Since there is only one group of creation and all is spiritual reality, then it is very necessary that we understand that the concrete visible expressions of these realities is the spiritual fact of reality itself, even though these visible forms appear as human sight, food, home, or a friend, or money. How different would man and the universe be to us if we would let this sense of separation of the human concept or material thing and the divine idea be swallowed up in unity, and see that loaves and fishes, the money and the wine, as the spiritual fact at hand, through the discernment of the reality of what the material senses behold.
So that's the truth about our universe, and we can see it day by day. And we thank you all for joining our session this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.